This week on Extinction Event, the King Island Emu. You ever heard of it?
Nope.
Okay. It's an emu.
Short, sweet intro.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Play the music.
Okay. Did you ever feel so bad inside? Well, the new welcome to Extinction Event.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Jack.
I wanted to jump in there and get the first time.
Yeah, before anybody else here does.
Before you get it. Uh-huh. And it looks like it's exactly what I did.
I appreciate that. I'm glad that you took
some
initiative.
Maybe I should be on King Island.
Oh, nice one. I was going to say maybe you should be on the intro assignment because I really let that one slip today.
Let me try. This week on Extinction Event... No, it's not.
That's
the same.
You got to say something after that.
I didn't even. I put the brakes right after that because I knew it was wrong.
It was wrong. Okay. I remember when I acted out like a few animals on some of the intros.
You have
back
to be way more specific.
I don't remember. I know I've done it.
Yeah, you've done like rawr.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, you did some like POV ones.
Right.
Yeah, those are good.
It takes work. You know,
it does. And to emotionally get to that place where you are that extinct animal.
Right.
It's kind of like Austin Butler after he did that Elvis movie and then he like couldn't get rid of the Elvis accent. Did you hear about this?
No.
He's in Dune. He's in the new Dune.
What does he play in the new Dune?
He's the like nephew who is all super, you know.
With no eyebrows.
Yeah.
And it looks like his eyes are really close together. Did they do something?
No, I think that's just how people look when you don't have eyebrows.
Okay. Babies don't look
so he famously, you know, did the Elvis movie and then like could not get rid of the accent. And I remember that's what you were like when you put yourself into one of the, I think it was like a ferret or something and you were really acting out. It was weeks before you came back to like sort of a human mode.
I don't remember it. I must have blacked it out.
That's what you kept saying.
I wish I had that kind of time and devotion and luxury to keep the characters of that episode going on. But that's too bad about that guy. Austin Butler is his name?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Superstar.
Yeah. He looks a lot better in that Elvis movie.
Than in Dune?
Yeah. The no eyebrows, that's rough for me. Such a little thing.
The Harkonnens. We don't need to get... This isn't a Dune podcast.
No, I don't want to go there. I was just...
But it's important that you don't... You're not supposed to like the Harkonnens.
Yes. It's like when a dog doesn't have a tail, you know? And like that's a big way that dogs send messages. For me, when a human doesn't have eyebrows, it's hard for me to read them.
There you go.
Them.
Very good analogy
right,
there.
Right. Back to the animals. But then let's take a break from the animals before we get into it. How's the airbrushing going?
It's slow and steady, okay? I'm not opening up a stand quite yet.
Okay.
I'm still practicing. That's all I'm going to say about it right now.
All right. Well, if you want to do the artwork for the show, just let me know and I'll give you an animal.
If I try to do the artwork right now, nobody would possibly grasp what the image is that they're looking at.
I could give you an easy one.
If it's a smiley face, yes.
Could you do a lion with a smiley face?
I could do a lion shape in lion colors. I don't know if anybody's going to look at it and say that's a lion.
All right. Well, there'll be a title with it, so it might help. So I don't want to take too much more time. I will say I made the mistake of looking at another review of the show that was negative and it crushed me for a little bit. And then Connor, again, has requested the Cape Lion as an episode. And I looked back at all the episodes that Connor recommended, and those are the ones that tend to get the most listens. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to try and do it next episode. Mm-hmm. Connor, if you haven't been listening, he is one of the longtime sort of listeners of the show who
practically writes the show.
He's given so many suggestions about really great animals and we tend to do them. So that's that. let me tell you about the King Island emu. And King Island, you know, where is it? It's really close to Christmas Island.
Oh.
You remember a couple episodes back, we did the Christmas Island bat.
Yeah.
So really close to that. And I found out there is another island nearby called New Year's Island.
Hmm. And remind me again where all these islands are?
By Tasmania. So okay. Sort of in between Tasmania and Australia. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a second. Okay, as I was doing this episode, I was like, emus, where are they in relationship to cassowaries and ostriches, right? The other flightless birds. Well, the biggest ones are, do you know?
Biggest flightless bird?
Mm-hmm.
Moa. You didn't say how to be living.
That's... I'm honored that you would say that. I'm honored. The biggest living flightless bird.
Ostrich.
Correct. It's ostriches. Cassowaries would be second.
Now, female cassowaries are bigger than the males. I learned that at the zoo.
Oh, thank you for that fact. I didn't have that in here. Oh. So the cassowaries are pretty stocky, too. They're large and in charge.
They get like 250 pounds.
Emus, they can be taller than cassowaries, but generally they're a little more svelte. Is that with no, that's
slender,
like they're just not as robust. So even if they're a little bit taller, they're pretty
I think that puny. Makes sense. I mean, because emus, you know, are more of like a running bird.
Yeah.
Like an ostrich, they use those big legs to get some ground speed. Cassowary, it doesn't seem like a running bird. It's more of a, in the Star Wars, it's like an AT-ST where it's just clomping around, clank, 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 through the moon of Endor.
Well, to me, it seems like it should be on King Island because it's got that kind of royal presence about it. When you see a cassowary, it's just like,
yeah,
look at me.
Yeah.
Like, do I need to say anything else?
It's got the colors. It's got the talons. Cassowaries rock. And I'm here to defend their honor.
Ostriches are native to Africa, though you can find them all over the place now. We like their eggs, and people like to put farms, little ostrich farms everywhere. You can also find them in Australia, which is where cassowaries and emus are native to.
I want you to close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a baby ostrich? I can't.
It just it's like, it looks like an adult ostrich shrunk down. Like, there's no baby characteristic to it. It's just a really tiny,
like, I
one.
Can picture an ostrich egg, but I don't know what comes out of that. I've only ever seen eggs or fully grown ostrich,
right? But
there's
got to
be one that's just slightly bigger than an egg. What does that look like?
You'll have to google that.
Mm,
yeah,
can't do it, sorry.
You forgot your phone. So emus, they also inhabited Tasmania and a few surrounding islands, which is what we're talking about today. There was also, in addition to the King Island emu, there was also a Kangaroo Island emu that went extinct. But I couldn't find a whole lot of information on that one. But those islands aren't that far from each other, and the similar circumstances. So
yeah, probably similar things.
Two for one.
Hey, question. Are emus good swimmers?
I don't think they're great. I think I came across something that they could go in to the water, but
I'm just wondering how they got to these islands.
Exactly. That's what we're kind of talking about right now. Well, rewind to the last ice age, our favorite ice age on extinction event, when sea levels were lower and these islands and Tasmania were connected to the Australian mainland. So emus were hanging out on that larger landmass that included Australia and Tasmania and what will eventually be all the surrounding islands until about 11,000 years ago when the glaciers start melting and the sea levels start rising. And now you have a smaller Tasmania landmass with a few surrounding islands like King Island, Kangaroo Island, and there's a couple more. And there's this bigger gap now between Australia and Tasmania, and that's called the Bass Strait, which is funny to me because it's probably so obvious if you were from Australia, like what I just said, you're like, okay, dummy, why are you telling me about that little bit of water in between those two? We know mm-hmm. what that is. And like, but not being from that area, I'm totally unfamiliar with it. And I have to kind of walk.
Used to be a little peninsula, glaciers melt, water goes up, now they're islands.
Yeah. So, and the emus on these islands are now cut off from their Tasmanian brethren. And at that point, they start shrinking in size. And it will shrink down to about half the size of the mainland emus. That's thanks to a process called insular dwarfism, which we've talked about on this show before.
That's how you get a pygmy hippo.
Right.
That's how you get anything stranded on an island is going to kind of shrink.
Yep.
Just to adhere to what it's working with, limited land mass, resources, etc.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could keep talking about it, but...
That's just the rundown.
And they become a different subspecies of the mainland.
Imagine how tiny the babies are.
The eggs of the emus on King Island and surrounding islands and those on the mainland end up staying around the same size. Huh. So when they're born, those chicks are very slightly smaller than the bigger ones. And that's, they think, to give them a better chance at survival. So that's one thing evolutionary-wise that they were able to keep. It's interesting, though, that you've got a bird half the size now.
That would be like a regular size emu pumping out gigantic, like football size eggs.
Right. It's...
rugby ball size.
It's got big eggs. Here's some other cool stats about it, okay? They were darker than their mainland cousins. That's so
fascinating. Okay.
They had naked blue skin on their neck. They were fast, like most emus. They foraged in groups, mostly for things like berries, grass, and seaweed. One way they defended themselves was by kicking,
mm-hmm.
which is probably their coolest feature. I'm out there with that.
Yeah, big feet for kicking. Do they have any predators?
They did. They did have a couple predators on the island. I know one was the quoll, Q-U-O-L-L, which is you know, nothing we would ever see over in the States.
Yeah.
It's like a small carnivorous marsupial. And
probably somehow related to the Tassie devil or something.
I don't know. I don't think they're closely related. No, but it looks like a bunch of animals put together. You know, it doesn't look like any one thing. I was trying to figure out, does it look like
a badger?
Yeah, a badger mixed with a
marmot,
like a wombat or something. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It was big
enough to take down a mini emu.
They're not that big, but they're vicious, these guys. Yeah. I believe they're smaller than the emus.
Okay.
But they could take probably the chicks is what they're going after. I'd say the biggest threat to them is when they were in a younger life stage and they, you know, those legs aren't going to kick off what they could later. Yeah. What else? So both parents helped incubate the eggs, which I'm always a fan of.
Got to share the labor.
Other than that, not a lot is known about them because once they make contact with modern humans, they will go extinct so fast that no one was really able to study their behavior. Like, this is one of the fastest extinctions we've ever done.
Okay.
Okay. Let me just tell you about the first contact and all that, and stop me if you need to. The first known modern contact with the King Island emu is a little hard to pin down, but there are references to that, like late Pleistocene humans going to the island. They've found evidence of humans there from 14,000 years ago, but no permanent settlements. So likely that was just
on your way exploring, following food, something like that.
Or you live in Australia, on that landmass, and you're just adventurous, checking out the islands. the first known European to discover it is a seal hunter, a Captain Reed, and that is in 1799. A couple years later, in 1802, a British ship called Lady Nelson was surveying the coast of Australia and happens upon King Island. And then later that same year, a French expedition called the Bowden Expedition, which was ordered by Napoleon. That's going to consist of naturalists and scientists and artists that are just like traveling around looking for cool stuff. They will also happen upon that island. So what I'm saying
See,
is...
this is why I want you to watch Master and Commander.
Is that what they're doing?
It's that era, and there is one character who is that guy. He's a naturalist.
Okay.
And yeah, they're just like sailing around the world, and he's like, oh my God, nobody's ever seen this before. Let me write it down.
But what is their ship?
To put yourself into that, yeah, you're going to put up with being in a crazy ship for 2 years or something, but you're also going unexplored territory and seeing just mind-blowing things.
Sure. This is not the first time I've thought about this, but I've also read quite a bit about these ships back then. And if you step foot on one of those ships, there's a big chance you're never going to make it back. Like, it's great if you do. It's great if you find all the stuff and make all these discoveries and bring all these, you know, specimens back. But it's a big price to pay because most of the people die on these ships.
Yeah.
A big percentage. What was that ship doing? Was it, it wasn't like just exploring?
In Master and Commander?
Yeah.
No, it was a warship.
A warship.
It was chasing a Napoleon warship.
Okay. And they're just like, while we're at it, let's just throw a naturalist on board.
Well, he was a ship's surgeon. So essential to the ship, since everybody, when you're in a big sea battle, there's a lot of people getting their limbs blown off and stuff. So you need a surgeon there to stitch everyone up, keep them alive. And he just happened to be a naturalist.
I feel like most people just happened to be a naturalist back then, which was...
It wasn't really well known.
No, I guess I'm just in that world where I'm reading about them a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this boat was pretty much all naturalists and scientists and stuff like that, and artists too. But just to remind you, so there's only a couple years there. So we've got 1799 to 1802, three different groups sort of discover it, right? We've got sealers, we've got a British ship and a French ship.
Yeah.
It's all in a real close time span. The Bowden expedition, the French ship, the members on board will collect specimens. They're going to be both alive and dead, and they'll collect them on those islands, on King Island and Kangaroo Island. They will find emus, right? So they send two King Island emus back to France that will eventually end up at the Jardin des Plantes in Paris. That's
the Garden of Plants.
Yeah. Yeah.
If my French is a little rusty.
Yeah, it started as that. It started as more of like a thing for plants, but it became many things, and it's actually still there just by a different name. It's a complex. So it includes the Natural History Museum, which I would consider one of the best extinct animal collections on display. Mm-hmm. If you are a fan of this show of extinct animals, you have to get to this museum, the Paris Natural History Museum. They've got everything we've talked about, pretty much. It
seemed like a big like depository for this entire time period around Napoleon, where they were just sending out everybody to go collect oddities.
Yeah.
And specifically find these like animals that would go extinct in the next 10 years.
Yeah, and they have them all there. And there's a gallery devoted just to that. It's awesome. So now that's the Paris Natural History Museum, but there was also a zoo type thing, right? So before the animals are expired, they are alive in a little zoo. And I think they still have a little zoo there as well on the premises. But in 1804, that's when those emus will be sent back to the Jardin des Plantes. And they will remain there for quite a while until their death in 1822. One of those is mounted, and you can see it now in the Natural History Museum that, you know, is just
okay.
a few feet from where it once lived, which is just crazy to me. The rest of the specimens were kind of just scattered about. Like, they went other places other than France, and like the skeletons kind of got separated, and it got real crazy out there.
Bugs ate them. Yeah. Probably not a lot hanging around.
When they were trying to piece together this species in more modern times, they were realizing they were dealing with totally different skeletons. And so I think they had to go find, you know, like the leg bone from specimen A and a head bone from C or whatever and put it together. Yeah. That's just one of the things that they bring back. They also bring 73 live animals when they do come back from that expedition, which I'm like, that's wild to have so many animals on a ship.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what varying size these animals were, but...
just in little wooden boxes and feeding them who knows what.
Yeah. That's, I'm sure that's a pretty long trip on there that you're stuck underneath the boat.
How many of those 73 you think came back alive? Seven?
I don't know. I choose to believe all 73 made it.
No way. No way. And you bring those back, it's like you're not just going home and doing, you're presenting it to like the royalty.
Yeah, actually, those emus that went to the Jardin des Plantes, they first went to like a princess or Empress Josephine's personal menagerie. So yeah, if you're royalty, you get first dibs on this stuff, and then you're like, I'm bored of it. You can, like, the common people can have it now.
Yeah. And you get to do a big speech in front of the like natural society for weird animals.
You think you could handle that job?
Which one particularly?
Like, sailing the seas looking for specimens.
It's probably the best of those around the world sailor types. That's probably the best one. You don't want to be a whaler. You're covered in whale fat. Oh, and it's disgusting. And you're just stinky. Killing whales and it's blood and it smells.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a battleship because you're going to get exploded and die. So yeah, definitely naturalist, going with the artsy scene. Just go and capture some animal, come back home, be famous. That's the best one.
It is. It is. I said on this ship, there's like scientists, naturalists, and artists. And I'm like, oh, maybe an artist would be cool. You're like just...
you're just there to sketch the animals.
Yeah, and the landscapes and whatnot. I think getting off the ship, maybe you've got some binoculars. You're like, I'm going to go find me a new animal today, discover a new one. And then your goal at that point is to get a specimen that you can taxidermy, and then a live one. So then you're always
two
occupied.
Two live ones, so they'll breed.
Two, ideally, yeah, at least. I'm sure at that point it's like, let's get as much as we can because lots of these are going to die on the way back, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of different things. Like, you're not just stuck doing one thing.
Right. It'd be awesome.
It'd be so
fun. It'd be the best way to do it.
Okay, so that's kind of what's happening. They're collecting animals at King Island, and they'll finish up and get back to Paris in 1804. I don't really know what happened with the British ship that technically found it first, I think a couple months before. I'm not sure how they factor into this. But the more important part of this is going to be those sealers.
Mm-hmm.
So those are seal hunters, right?
Right.
That were there just a couple years before. This, like I said, is a fast extinction, and I'll step you through it as best as I can because we're working with like 5 years here. As usual, we don't know for sure exactly what happened. We do know that everybody got there roughly around the same time. We also know that the sealers are there because elephant seals are living on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And most of what we know about the King Island emus is from one of the sailors, Cooper. I think I briefly mentioned him. He noted that the emus were hunted by the sealers. So they are eating them. He himself will say that he killed around 300 while he was there.
Just that one dude.
Just him.
Wow. Okay.
Considering how long he was on the island, that nets out to about 50 seals a month that he alone was killing.
Okay.
That's just him. There are about a dozen other people in his sealing party. So I'm guessing here, but it seems like the sealers would, you know, drop anchor near the island, spend the day hunting seals. That's their job. And then go ashore to hunt for food for the ship, right? Yeah. Or maybe a couple people are doing that instead of hunting for seals that day. They also had dogs with them that would help them hunt the seals down, which, not unlike the dodo, not that hard to hunt down.
Right.
They tend to gather in large groups of around 80 individuals near the outer edges of the island, so they're not inside forested area. They're foraging for food out there, and that's it. They're just like an open, easy target.
Yeah.
Now, they would defend themselves, which I don't remember the dodo doing, right?
I don't. Yeah, we didn't hear anything about dodo attacks or dodo revenge.
They're just like, oh.
Yeah.
I guess like there's nothing we can do. We have adapted nothing to defend ourselves from like a dog.
Yeah.
If that truly is what is coming after us. They would use their big legs to kick away the dogs, and they could inflict some damage. So they were trying. And we know all this because the French ship, someone on the French ship interviewed Cooper, the sealer. And so the French guy estimated that his group alone probably killed around 3,600 birds.
Okay.
Okay. So to me, I'm like, okay, that's probably what did it. Maybe this wasn't the only group hunting seals there too, right?
Yeah.
At some point in the story of King Island emus, inevitably there will be mention of natural fires on the island. There isn't a whole lot of evidence to back up, though, the actual existence of fires contributing to the emu's extinction. And to me, it sounds a lot like what we do when we know we extincted something, but we're so humble, we don't want to take credit for it.
Right.
We blame it on something else, like lightning striking the island. And it,
yeah.
Which I'm like, okay, guys, they were there for a long time.
Yeah, and then I bet there was fires every year.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a couple more fires that year, but probably not.
Right.
Probably not the leading cause.
No, you read these old accounts of it and they're like, we don't know what happened. It's the sealers. Like,
yeah.
It was them. It's not a large island. It's smaller than Kauai, which is one of the smaller Hawaiian islands. And if their dogs are taking out several a day,
it adds up. Right, we got it. It's okay. Like compound interest.
So we think they were extinct by 1805.
That was it?
That's it. And what's wild is those emus that are in Paris will likely outlive, like, by almost 20 years, their entire species.
Wow. So they stayed alive that long?
Yeah, they did. Wow. So they went in 1804 and they died in 1822.
Wow. It was
a little under 20 years. So that's what's wild to me about possibly the one that you are seeing mounted in that Natural History Museum in Paris could be the very last one that ever existed.
The Endling.
Yes. And we kind of just talked about all the reasons why, so I'm not going to go back into it. I've got some more interesting stuff. But that's it for them. That's kind of their story.
It's kind of a sad story for those guys, you know, taking to Paris.
Yeah.
Dreaming their last dreams about going back to a home that isn't there.
It's there, but it's...
Is it really? There's all your friends and family are gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's real quick one for you. It's a fascinating one to me, though.
An express extinction.
The express train.
They were just their downfall is they were vulnerable to extinction. Easily hunted. Bing, bang, boom. See you in five.
And then if you are that group of hunters that were on the island, who, by the way, almost, killed out all the elephant seals as well, and they extincted a wombat or something. You took out a whole species there, a subspecies, but like single-handedly, you did it.
I mean, if you were a miner and you're looking for copper and you found a rich copper vein and you used your pickaxe and you got all of it, you'd say, well, good job by me. I got all my resources, on to the next. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, and they probably don't mind what's right. It's just a resource to them.
And
yeah.
I think, you know, the prevailing mindset at that time was like, it would be an affront to God that you could even suggest that you could extinct things.
Right, we didn't understand it then.
You know, like, these are animals. This is a bounty. We killed all in this area, but there's surely many more elsewhere.
Right, we couldn't possibly... Right, if they're gone, it's because of lightning.
Yeah.
Right.
God killed them.
Speaking of bounties, I'm not done with the story
Boba
yet.
Fett.
The emus on King Island and Kangaroo Island are gone. And actually, the emus are gone from Tasmania as well. But humans will continue to have it out for emus on mainland Australia. So now we're back to the big guys. They were put on a protected list for a while, but then they started messing with farmers' crops. And we know that is a death sentence, right?
It's a big no-no.
So they took them off the list and they put a bounty on their heads. This, I think, was in 1923. So this is a long time in the future, right? We're in a totally different century now. 100 years after the last King Island emu is dead, and we are in mainland Australia, and we have a bounty on emus' heads, okay?
Oh, God.
This is crazy. They enlist soldiers to hunt down emus with machine guns.
Wow. This is a side quest on, like, Grand Theft Auto. Yeah. Go out to the emu farm and with these semi-automatic weapons.
Just open up. I appreciate it because it makes me feel like Australia is America if, you know, we were over there. Like, it sounds like something Americans would really get behind and into.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so bizarre.
I mean, I've never felt more American than when I was playing Red Dead Redemption. And I'm on a horse, you know, on horseback, chasing a herd of buffalo, throwing dynamite at them.
Throwing dynamite.
That's when you really get that American blood flowing. When you throw a stick of dynamite into a herd of bison and watch them explode, it's like George Washington giving you a good firm handshake.
It has that kind of flavor to it, the machine guns, the hunting down emu, which I guess wasn't all that successful. But it sounds exciting. And one soldier said that the emus actually needed to be shot in the back of the head with their mouths closed, or through the front with their mouths open to kill them. Like, it made it so. Here's what I think is happening. They're like, they're missing with the machine guns. So, yeah, you've got to go up and shoot them.
Aren't emus just like, isn't the whole thing with emus is they're incredibly dumb?
I don't know. Is that a stigma they have?
That they're very aloof and, like, yeah, pretty kind of dumb.
I doubt it.
When I was a kid growing up going to the Wild Animal Park in San Diego, they had a bird show, and they'd bring out this emu, and that was the whole shtick.
Really?
Was that it's very dumb.
That's so messed up.
And
oh,
it doesn't remember anything. Basically, that was I remember that being kind of the jokes, that it has a 5-second memory span. So he'd say, you know, introduce it to the crowd like 10 times.
I feel like
he forgot.
Dating the heck out of yourself, because I cannot imagine them considering it. the emu to be dumb. It's now, right?
It's entertainment, and it was quality jokes. It was just like, you know, because they got that blank stare on their face, and it's very easy to imagine an emu being very dumb. Okay. Look, I'm sure somebody is an emu owner who can back this up. I don't think anybody's going to bat saying emus are like a raven, or, you know.
You just got to be careful, because it gives us reason to be like, it's okay to kill off this entire species because they're dumb, right? They don't know any better. Like, it gives us a free ticket to do that.
You know, if that's the reason to extinct it, like, you were going to find a reason.
Okay. So listen, add to your machine gun side quest on Grand Theft Auto that you now need to do a headshot, but somebody has to close the front. Like, wait, you're shooting it through the head, but if it escapes through the beak, is it still gonna live? I
that doesn't make any sense.
I know. I don't want to say too much, because again, this is one of those stories. If you're from Australia, you probably know all about machine gunning down emus, but I might want to do a whole episode on it, because it's just so bizarre. It's like camel core territory, if you guys have listened to the camel core episode.
Well, it's like in Thailand or somewhere, if you pay like $300 American, you can go blow up like a cow with a rocket launcher.
A domesticated cow?
I don't think it's a wild cow.
You're right. They're all kind of domesticated. Okay, I didn't know you could do that. Maybe we should do a whole episode where it's messed up stuff like that you can do to animals.
If you want to, okay. I just...
Look, I'm just looking for some numbers here.
Pump them up. Right? I told you, people want blood and guts.
They do. And we got it. We got machine guns and emus here. So what happened to those emus? Well, they do end up culling down the population quite a bit. The vermin board, like it's like in California, it's like the avocado board, right?
Uh-huh.
But this is the vermin board, was paying out the bounties for eggs and birds, I think up until the 1950s.
All right.
Surprisingly, though, they do not go extinct, and the numbers have since bounced back. So that's good news. Or not, since you tend to not really have a whole lot of respect for these emus.
I am just saying that they are not thought of as a very smart bird. And I'm telling you, someone who's listening owns an emu and can back that up.
All right. If you own an emu, please let us know if you like emus or not. And once again,
that was not if you like them.
If they're smart. If emus are smart,
would you call your emu intelligent?
Would you call it intelligent? Drop us a line. Look in the show notes for the speak pipe. I'll throw that. You could leave a 1 minute long voice.
You can leave as long as you want. You want 30 minutes? Go ahead.
Leave as long as you want, or just write an email to extinctionpod@gmail.com as well. Okay, what happened to, this is the last little bit, what happened to King Island?
Godzilla exploded it.
There have been over 60 shipwrecks there. There are over 2,000 deaths tallied up because of it. So the island might be haunted. Or at least the waters around the island.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty haunted. The elephant seals pretty much disappear by the 1820s. So gone. They've
hunted into extinction.
Almost. Pretty much gone. But they up and moved out, right? But mm-hmm. I'll note on that date, depending on when they moved out, the King Island emus in the Paris Zoo will outlive them. The island at that point has a few years of calmness, a little reprieve for the wildlife there. It was scantily populated until 1880 when they opened it up for grazing.
Mm.
Yeah, that's when a whole lot of people start showing up. Not a whole lot, but people.
Enough.
Yeah. at that point, the island, which used to be pretty forested, a lot of trees, will lose a lot of the vegetation. And currently around 1,600 people live there. That's not a lot.
No.
It's known for its production of cheese, lobsters, bottled rainwater,
mm-hmm.
and kelp.
All things that you don't really need grazing for. I guess cheese, but...
It's more of a vacation island at this point.
Okay.
It's a golf island.
Oh.
There's a couple courses on there. So that's... People are into that. You got to take a plane to get there. It's a little under 50 minutes from Hobart, which is in Tasmania.
Cool.
So that's it about them. No emus. King Island's still going strong with those 1,600 residents and the emus.
And ghosts of emus haunting their shores.
I mean, to you, Jack? Do you think they're smart enough to have ghosts?
Hmm. That would be a pretty funny ghost.
Man, what is that emu in San Diego? He's the butt of every show. They're like, he's so disrespected. He has to go back to his cage after every show and be like, wow, I'm a real POS.
They're not that smart to even acknowledge that they're being made fun of. It's kind of the joke.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's...
Could you imagine that was some real dumb ghost? You know, coming in and then seeing its reflection and just attacking its reflection for, I don't know, 20 minutes? You'd be like, well, it was scary. Now it's just kind of adorable.
You know what, Jack? Bye.
Bye. Did you ever feel so bad inside?
Peg Leg Deer production.